Welcome to the Wampa's Lair podcast. Deep in the bowels of the frozen ice caverns of Hoth, our hosts, Carl LeClaire and Jason Hunt, have been frozen upside down to the cave ceiling with nothing to do but talk all things Star Wars. So make yourselves comfortable, but keep a wary eye out for trouble here in the Wampa's Lair.
Hey everybody, and welcome back to another exciting episode of the Wampa's Lair podcast. This is episode number 141, A Larian Hope. I'm, as always, one of your hosts, Jason Hunt, and with me, we have the Ponda Baba to my Dr. Evazan. We have Carl LeClaire.
Jason, just because I'm not as articulate as you doesn't mean I can't speak English.
But I have the death sentence on 12 systems.
I'll be careful of that.
You'll be dead!
Come, this little one's not worth the trouble. Let me buy you something to drink. What does he say? No blasters! No blasters! And there you go. So everybody, thank you for listening to this episode of the Wampa's Lair podcast. This has been the Cantina Brawl.
The shortest episode ever. No.
Jason, we've been holding out on a while. We've got all these awesome Larian inquiries. You know, all you guys have been doing an awesome job sending in really great ideas, questions, lots of things, which we just don't seem to ever have time to get to anymore. And we're going to get to as many as we can in the episode today. Probably still won't get through everything. So Jason and I have kind of admitted to the fact that we kind of need to start doing one of these a month. So, which yeah. I have no problem with because it's a lot of fun. And you know, it sounds like from some of the things you guys are writing in, you guys, you're just as deep, if not deeper, than we are. And you guys need to start reaching out to us if you want to be on the show, because we'd love to have some of our Larians on.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's always fun. We know we don't have a lot of guests anymore, so it'd be great to get some of you guys, or girls, on here.
Indeed. Indeed.
But, Jason, before we hump, wow.
Wow.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy. Hump day was yesterday.
Right. I keep forgetting. but before we get into any of those, we had a matchup carried over from a couple episodes ago with a very ridiculous outcome.
Yeah,
I guess it's not that shocking, but we did a kind of like a in-universe type duel setup. So, we were talking about if Luke Skywalker from The Empire Strikes Back went up against Obi-Wan in his Episode 1 prime, who would have won? And Jason, what did you want to say about this?
Well, it's a shutout, folks. And since everybody basically agrees with everybody, and since we have a limited time to get through your inquiries tonight, I'm not going to read any of the responses. We do want to thank everybody for sending them in. There's a lot of really well thought out ones, some really funny ones. But the final Larian tally in the Episode 1 Obi-Wan versus the Episode 5 Luke is 20-0 in favor of Obi-Wan Kenobi.
All right. Can I tell you why I disagree with everyone?
Sure.
I don't. Actually, though, I was hoping for at least a few for Luke, because I was going to take Luke's back. And here's why. For starters, I almost wish I had, you know, everybody made great points. You know, like a few people got confused about the fact that we were talking about just Episode 1 Obi-Wan, because they did make, you know, mention about how he, you know, defeats Grievous, or he defeated Anakin and Mustafar. We're just looking at Episode 1 Obi-Wan, but again, a lot of people brought up, you know, the fact that he beats Darth Maul. Yes. And Darth Maul is not a force to be reckoned with. But my contention is that Darth Vader, even at, like Empire Strikes Back, Darth Vader, I still think would wipe the floor with Darth Maul. I really do. Just, you know, everybody gets caught up with how fast and flashy it is. But like, again, watch Vader, especially watch Vader's fighting Kanan in the Rebels season 2 premiere. Vader isn't flashy. He's not like Anakin. He is just a brute force. And also, his force abilities are so darn strong that I think he would have made quick work of Darth Maul as well. So, and yeah, Luke definitely doesn't beat Vader by any stretch of the imagination, but he holds his own for the most part. I guess he gets kind of toyed with. But I think it would be closer than people are giving credit to Luke for. I think Luke would stand his own. I don't know that he would necessarily win, but I think he would do a lot better than a lot of people think. Because again, if we look at their two opponents, I think Vader is a far superior opponent for Luke than Darth Maul was for Obi-Wan. And think about it, like Obi-Wan and the Jedi of his day were all trained in the same old style, whereas Luke is probably trained in a different way. There's a new way of fighting. So I don't know. I'm just trying to give some countermeasures here, I guess. But yeah, I mean, I guess at the end of the day, sure, Obi-Wan probably would win. Yeah, I thought that was such a good idea, and then like I was sorely disappointed in the responses. You know, but I guess it does make sense. But I think keep that in mind. We should do that though sometimes, Jason. We should do a Darth Maul versus Darth Vader matchup, which I think we have done. But maybe we'll come back to that, because I do think Vader would wipe the floor with Darth Maul. Anyway.
We already know where you stand on that matchup.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I don't know. Were you going to go with Obi-Wan as well?
I was. And taking their opponents out of the picture, I think Obi-Wan still stacks up better than Luke simply because of his proficiency in using the Force. Sure. He's been using the Force for many, many years, longer than Luke has, and he's practiced it enough to where it's habitual. And so he can just fall back on that, no problem, and use the Force, you know, even if they were completely even with their dueling. I think Obi-Wan would still take it because of his edge with the Force.
Sure.
By the time we get to Return of the Jedi Luke, though, I think Return of the Jedi Luke would beat Phantom Menace Obi-Wan. I think that isn't any question. But in Empire Strikes Back, I still think that Phantom Menace Obi-Wan would beat Luke. So
yeah, that's a good point. You know, I mean, Obi-Wan has been a Jedi his whole life.
Yes.
He's been using the Force. He's been practicing with a lightsaber. Luke's been doing it for however long that timeline is on an Empire.
Mm-hmm.
Weeks, yeah. Months at the most. Probably a few weeks.
Yeah.
So.
That gives us a final tally for this matchup of 22-0.
Yeah. It's a close one.
That close only counts in horseshoes and hand grenades.
I've heard that.
Yes. Okay.
Let's get to our awesome Larians with their great inquiries, their great questions.
Yes.
And let's get to work.
Yes. Yes. You want me to kick it off?
Yeah, you kick it off. And again, I want to say again real quick that, you know, we got a lot. So we're going to get through as many as we can. Again, if we missed you, we'll be back. Don't worry.
Yes. Yes. All right. And a lot of these are from several months ago, since we did our last one of these, which was, I think, back in April. Yeah. But Philip Liebold sent in a comment. He says, here's a comment for you to chew on if you like. The Force Awakens teaser 2, to me, showed just how big of a fan of Star Wars J.J. Abrams is. He knew, if he had any hand in its production, exactly what would affect fans of the OT emotionally. This gives me hope that the final product will be good. What say you, Carl?
I agree. I like Philip. I completely agree that and I think we all felt that at Celebration, and I think Philip's absolutely right. You know, there is definitely a stronger homage to the OT, which kind of makes sense. It's that sequel to that series as opposed to a sequel to the prequels. So of course it has more of that flavor, but I think whether you're a PT or an OT guy, that trailer captured you because it captured what Star Wars is. It captured that like sense of magic and of wonder. You know, especially just that opening shot itself with the speeder flying by and the downed Star Destroyer. I mean, everybody was immediately grabbed. I mean, it was like the opening shot of A New Hope in 1977. I mean, of course, not to that extent, of course. But, you know, it had that same feel of just grabbing you right away and grabbing you up into this magical world. And I think that's exactly what it's doing. You know, J.J. Abrams wants to kindle that magic that is Star Wars.
Right. And I just got to say, every time I go to the movie theater to see a movie and that trailer comes on and I'm not expecting it, I always get chills. It's always amazing. And I'm like, oh, yes.
I have yet to see it in the theaters. Every time I go to a movie, I'm like, why didn't they play this?
Oh my gosh.
I know. Carl. I know it. I want to see it so bad. I was like, okay, because granted, I don't go to the movies a ton, and the last couple I'd seen were not necessarily the type of movies that would probably have a Star Wars trailer. But when I saw Jurassic World, I'm like, okay, for sure, I'm going to get it here. But I didn't. And I was like, what
you
the
heck? You
didn't
get it?
Did you have it at Jurassic World?
Yeah.
The heck? Come on,
well,
Boston.
Of course, I was at the AMC, you know, IMAX 3D preview night screening, so, you know. Okay. They showed all the geek trailers that sure. night.
Yeah, they showed a ton of geek trailers, but not Star Wars. I was like, no. I was like, Vader, no.
No.
I woke up from that experience, and I turned to my girlfriend, and I go, where is the Force Awakens trailer? Is it safe? Is it all right? And she goes, it seems, in your nerdiness, you missed it. Oh, man.
That's awesome. That's awesome. All right, let's get on to the next one. You want to read this one?
Sure, even though you're way better at reading than me, which makes me sound stupid. But anyway, Jeffrey Beaumont says, inquiry question. Oh, man, I love this. What do bathrooms look like in the Star Wars universe? With a plethora of aliens, the number of bathrooms must be quite numerous. Your guess is as good as mine, Jeffrey.
Since we have yet to see one on screen, I'm not sure if they have any in the new comics or anything, but I have no idea. I would assume they're some sort of, you know, they look somewhat like our bathrooms, maybe just a little bit more generic with a little bit of extra room to accommodate various alien species, but I have no flippin' idea.
Yeah.
So, what do you think bathrooms look like in the Star Wars universe, Jeffrey? That's what I want
real,
to know.
That's the real question.
Yes. All right. Andrew Hansen wrote in, and he said, all right, here's my question for you. How are you guys picking up your Star Wars comics, and what have been your thoughts on the series so far? Maybe give each a rating from 1 to 5 stars. Well, I can answer that pretty quickly. I'm not. I have issues 1 and 2 of Kanan, and I'm actually considering trying to get the rest of Kanan that's out right now. That's the only one I'm buying at the moment. And I have them in trade, or not trades, in the individual issues. I've been picking them up at conventions I've been going to, because the nearest comic book store is probably about 20 minutes away from my house, in an area I don't go to very often, and it doesn't have a very good selection. So I'm either going to have to pick these up at like a convention, or I'm going to have to order them online. And for Kanan, I think I'm want to just stick with the actual hard copy individual issues. The other ones I may pick up and trade, or I'll just have Carl tell me what's going on, because I know Carl reads a lot of it. So
yeah, I've loved the new Marvel series. You know, I think the Star Wars series itself, I'd give that 5 out of 5 stars. Kanan has been incredible, 5 out of 5 stars. Leia,
oh yeah, definitely.
Leia was okay. That's already they just finished that one. It was good. It started high, got kind of lame, and ended with a pretty decent. The very ending was very good. That's my opinion. I'd give it like a 3.5 star out of 5. Lando just started. I haven't read the second issue yet. The first issue was good. Cool appearance by a really cool PT character at the end. That's all I'll say. I won't spoil it. But too early to make a judgment. And I think, Darth Vader has been awesome. 5 out of 5 for sure. I think though, honestly, Kanan has been my favorite one.
It's amazing.
It's really good.
Like I said, I've only got the first two issues. But not only is the artwork glorious,
yeah,
to steal Mark Herleman's description, but the storytelling is great too. And like I said, I'm only two issues in, so I need to pick the rest of them up big time. So
yeah.
And how are you getting them?
Oh, good. Yeah, good. just there's a comic book shop that I go to. I've been missing every couple Wednesdays, but the guy holds them for me, which is really nice. And the guy at church that got me into comics, he often is there and he just picks them up for me and brings them to me at church. He's really nice. And if I do miss something and I really want to get on it, I'll get it digitally, and then, you know, but I want the hard copies as well. So I always make sure to get them from the comic shop as well.
Nice.
But yeah, I prefer having the hard copy of the Star Wars ones, just because they're really great.
I'm the same way with books. Everybody's like, oh, e-readers are so great. And I'm sure they are, but I love – nothing to me beats the feel of a book in your hands.
Yeah.
And I'm the same with comics.
It's better for your eyes too.
True.
So anyway, moving on to our next question. This is from Christopher Falk. He says, my question probably is a bit of a simple one. Have you ever done an episode of Just the Rule of Two and the Sith Apprentices in the movies and the EU? If you haven't, is it a show you'd consider? It'd be cool to know your opinions on the Rule of Two and the Rule of Two and the Sith Apprentices that were chosen. We have not done a specific episode on that. Maybe this is a great segue into getting Lord Bruticus back on. But just, I mean, I think at least a quick response to the, you know, the Rule of Two and the rule. Wow, why can't I say Rule of Two? My opinion of the Rule of Two is I think it's a really cool piece that we have in Star Wars. I think it's something very mythological. And I think it's really cool that it's a villainous thing too. It's a villainous mythological tool, which I think is really cool because a lot of Star Wars is the mythology of the hero. So it's cool that there's this kind of mythological piece for our villains as well, that they have this boundary, they have this own restriction for themselves. And it says a lot about those types of villains because the Rule of Two is simply in place because the nature of a Sith, the nature of the dark side is greed and envy and power. So it's this constant battle, like, okay, I'm the master now, but the apprentice I know eventually is going to try to kill me, and then vice versa. You know, it's just this constant grappling for power. And it tells you a lot about the villains of Star Wars is, you know, it's this really cool idea that the Sith Order itself can't become a community. It's the antithesis of the Jedi Order, which I think is so cool. The Jedi are all about building this order and this community, and the Sith are like, well, we can only have two because our egos are too big. You know, right. I just think it's really cool.
We'll destroy ourselves, and the Legends had a great. I haven't read it, but the Legends had a great. Story about how that all came about, because they were all basically ended up losing a war because the infighting got so bad, and Darth Bane was just like, screw it, you're all dead, and killed them all except for his apprentice, and that's how the Rule of Two was established. Very spark notes and maybe not quite accurate. I think it's cool, the Rule of Two. This may be a great episode to get Lord Bruticus on, because I think he's read those books, and I haven't.
I haven't either.
So, but yeah, I wouldn't mind doing it.
Yeah.
We did just do an episode about the Sith and their motivations.
Yeah. Again, this question will
be interesting go back and maybe reevaluate that based on from the Rule of Two perspective. So, nice.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, our next one was on Twitter, at Star Wars Trilogy 456, asks us what our favorite scene from A New Hope is. And I can only guess that this guy's a prequel fan.
My favorite scene from A New Hope is when Qui-Gon meets Jar Jar.
Oh, okay.
For me, it's definitely... it's tough. I did probably Luke looking off to the sunset. It depends on the day of the week. A New Hope, to me, it's actually really funny. I was watching it. I had it on the background at work today, and I commented Joe Hogan. I was like, you know, A New Hope is, in my opinion, the weakest of the originals. And I know, like, hardcore Star Wars fans of the originals are taken aback right now, and I'm not saying I don't like it. But somebody from a more modern context, again, there's a lot of slowness to A New Hope. We don't have really any human interaction once the Battle of Tanafor is over for a good 10 to 15 minutes until we meet like Luke and stuff. But yeah, I mean, it depends on the day. Sometimes it's when they meet Han Solo. Sometimes it's the sunset. Sometimes it's the end scene. Sometimes it's the fight with the TIE fighters when they're fleeing the Death Star. But yeah, I think at the end of the day, it's probably the you know, that iconic scene of Luke watching the setting suns. But what about you, Jason?
For me, it alternates between the for me, it's all about the dogfights in A New Hope. It alternates between the escape from the Death Star with the TIE fighters and the Falcon, or it's the Battle of Yavin with the X-Wings and the Death Star. It's one or the other, and it just depends for me, you know, also, you know, what mood I'm in, you know, which one I end up liking more. But those are my two favorite scenes, and I love a lot of other scenes in the movie, don't get me wrong, but the two that stand on top are definitely the dogfights. So, all right.
Nice.
Cody Murphy sent in two. Mm-hmm. Do you want me to read these?
Sure.
Okay. Cody Murphy sent in two. One is from a while back, and the other one is more recent, but since it was from... they were both from him, I just stuck them together. Cody Murphy says, and this was the one that was a while back, there's talk of an Obi-Wan trilogy of films, and I was contemplating story ideas and wonder what you think of this story. Film one would be Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon go on the mission of Mandalore, where he meets Satine, as referenced in the Clone Wars. Film number two was a live-action adaptation of the Maul arc in Clone Wars and the Darth Maul Son of Dathomir comic arc. And film number three would be the final confrontation between Maul and Obi-Wan on Tatooine. Perhaps Maul holds Owen and Beru hostage, hence the strained relationship between them and why Obi-Wan never got to train Luke. What do you think of that story of an Obi-Wan Kenobi trilogy, if we got an Obi-Wan Kenobi trilogy?
First off, I think these are all awesome ideas, and I'm not opposed to them. And again, it doesn't matter what I think. But I think an Obi-Wan trilogy is too much. Just because, first off, like, again, Cody, these are all awesome ideas, but I think, you know, the first one about, you know, Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan showing up on Mandalore, I think that could be done in a novel. It could be done in a comic series. I don't know that we need to see a movie of that. And then a live action adaptation of something we already have. That's okay. I don't think we need that either. But the third one, for sure, we need that. You know, this was probably sent in after we did our anthology episode, Jason, mm-hmm. before that we did it.
Yes.
You know, I think, you know, the idea of Obi-Wan and Maul, you know, having that final confrontation on Tatooine would be sick. I think that'd be a great story. You could do a lot with Obi-Wan's character there. But I think Obi-Wan's character arc has been well developed, even when we get to episode one and then through two and three. I mean, Obi-Wan's character is the best acted as well as story arced character probably in the PT. So again, these are all awesome ideas. I'd watch every single one of them. But I'm just kind of a fan of a standalone Obi-Wan movie between three and four. What do you think?
I think I'd agree with you on that. But as a trilogy, I think these three films would work. If you wanted to make it a trilogy, I think having, you know, the three beats that he has laid out here in the films like this would work, because the first one, Obi-Wan meets Satine, it's, you know, the introductory sort of happier laying the groundwork sort of film. Film two, which is the, you know, the Clone Wars, basically the Clone Wars arc, where he gets to his real low point, Satine gets killed, he has to meet up with his nemesis again, but only manages to escape. And then film three is that final confrontation, you know, post Revenge of the Sith. As a trilogy, I think that would work, but I think a single standalone movie after Revenge of the Sith and before A New Hope would work best for Obi-Wan, just in general. So,
yeah.
His newer, more recent question was a hypothetical. Would you rather get The Force Awakens now, or have to wait I'm assuming by now he means in December, or have to wait three more years, but it means the Clone Wars gets its proper 8-season conclusion, and I would rather have The Force Awakens now. I don't... as much as I love the Clone Wars, and as much as I would have loved to see it get to its, you know, full conclusion that Dave Filoni had planned out, And The Clone Wars is one of my favorite TV shows. It doesn't, to me, compare to getting a new Star Wars movie in the theaters. Yeah. So I would, as much as I love The Clone Wars, as much as I love the prequels, which is where The Clone Wars are set, I would much rather have the sequel trilogy, Force Awakens.
Mm.
So, what about you?
Yeah, for sure. Definitely Force Awakens. I mean, all the same reasons. I just happened to, I just commented to you before we started recording, Jason, that I just started rewatching Clone Wars, and I'm falling in love all over again. I love this series, and I would have loved getting, a nice, proper, neat conclusion, but not at the expense of having to wait 3 more years for The Force Awakens, especially in light of all we've already seen of The Force Awakens.
Right.
If this was a realistic question they were asking fans right now before they said anything about The Force Awakens other than we're getting a new Star Wars movie, maybe I'd say, okay, I can do 3 more years as long as we're getting 3 years of an awesome TV show.
Right.
But at this point, no way. I take Force Awakens any day.
Yeah.
But
especially with all the publicity and the trailers that we've seen.
Right.
I think you're right. Maybe if, when they announced the new movie.
Although, say, I don't know. I was pretty darn excited when I heard that we were going to get some new Star Wars movies. I think even then I'd be like, give me the movie.
True. It would have been a better odds for the Clone Wars back at that announcement. Yeah. But
right.
I think the movie still would win out.
Oh yeah, for sure.
So, all right.
Our next one also comes from Twitter at BamaGuy79. Oh, Bama. Yeah, like Alabama. Get it.
Yes. Okay.
Wow, Carl, you're slow. He says, if Vader was redeemed by Luke and was a Jedi again, implied by his Force Ghost in Return of the Jedi, why doesn't he vanish when he dies? I've got some thoughts.
You've got some thoughts.
May I show
them? Go for it.
Yay. First off, you're right. We don't see him vanish. Absolutely. But also, I think when Luke has the funeral pyre for Darth Vader's stuff, I don't think Anakin's in there. I think it's implied that he did vanish. Because I don't think Luke would know to burn his father's body. I don't know. Maybe. But I don't know. Again, obviously, my answer is no better than anybody else's as a fan. But I'm almost wondering if maybe it just took a little bit longer to fade because, I don't know, he was so evil. I don't know, maybe there was just something clinging to him a bit more that just took a little bit of a longer process. But I don't know, you mean you're right. I mean, Obi-Wan vanishes immediately, Yoda vanishes immediately, but Anakin seems to linger. My guess is maybe it's just because he wasn't quite there. He wasn't quite as caught up in the Force the way that Yoda and Obi-Wan were.
Uh-huh.
And maybe it's just, it was more, there was still kind of that process maybe of Anakin unpacking, which just took a little bit longer. Again, I'm really stretching it here. Obviously, I don't know, but that's my kind of guess. Maybe like the Catholic idea of purgatory. You go to purgatory for a little bit to make sure you're good and ready for heaven, and then you go to heaven. So Anakin had a very brief purgatory stage where the Force was like, dude, you did some really bad things. He's like, I know, I didn't mean it. And they're like, okay, come on. So anyway, what do you think?
That's actually not a bad idea, the whole purgatory idea. He went to Force Purgatory for a little bit.
Yeah, exactly.
I think the reason he doesn't disappear is primarily because he didn't get the training. Obi-Wan and Yoda have been training and have been learning and studying how to do this, how to become a Force ghost, how to give their essence to the Force, basically, in order to survive after death. I think the Legends continuity had an answer for that. I'm blanking on it at the moment. But maybe we'll get a new answer, with the new canon. And I believe they're making new Star Wars novelizations coming out in September or something, starting in September. So maybe it'll explain that in the Return of the Jedi version. But I almost wonder if him becoming a Force ghost isn't just a side effect of the fact that Anakin is the Chosen One. Maybe he's, since he is the Chosen One, and since he finally, quote-unquote, brought balance to the Force the way he was supposed to, or the way that the Force designed, ultimately, perhaps that's just his reward, you know. I don't know, but that's a thought. You know, because he is the chosen one, and he has the highest concentration of Midichlorians ever seen in a life form. So, you know, maybe he doesn't need quite the training that Obi-Wan and Yoda did. Maybe just, you know, fulfilling the prophecy is all that he needed. So, I don't know. That's a really interesting thought.
Yeah. That's a good question, too.
Yeah.
Because, again, it has been, you know, it seems to, the saga itself implies, you know, the story point shows that when these Jedi vanish, they become these Force ghosts. But we don't see that with Vader. Or Anakin, for that matter, excuse me. So, yeah. I have no problem saying that he vanished at some point. Because I've always assumed that when Luke is burning, he's burning Darth Vader's stuff. I don't assume Anakin's in there. I've always just assumed he's burning his father's past. You know.
Right.
He's purging the evil that his father committed. Because his father has made peace. So he's destroying that which, you know, that which was his evil. Yeah. Who knows? Good question.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Anthony Rice sent in something. First, a comment. And this was from a couple months ago. So the references are from then. Hey, Jason and Carl, or Carl and Jason. I want to let you know that I enjoyed your show, and especially the difference from the other Star Wars podcasts I listen to. I love the many voices that Jason can perform and the deep spiritual truths that Carl shares. I especially like Carl's thoughts on Jar Jar in the most recent episode. That was our Jar Jar Binks episode, as I have been interacting with someone this last week that would fall into the annoying category. Thanks for reminding me to deal with this person in the way that Jesus would. On a less serious note, I have a Larian inquiry. How do you explain the apparent discord between Obi-Wan's line about only stormtroopers' blaster bolts being so accurate, and then their inability to shoot anything the rest of the saga? I heard that line during the radio drama at the end of the episode and had an idea. What if Obi-Wan meant the physical blaster marks in comparison to the Sand People's blast marks? Maybe he could tell that the stormtroopers assumedly had newer and better cared for blasters and would make finer or cleaner blast marks, while the Sand People's older and ill-used blasters would leave rougher marks on anything they shot. Just a thought I had while hanging upside down with the two of you. So, what do you think?
So, first off, thanks for the nice comments.
Yes.
Especially in lieu of how we started the episode. you know, all kidding aside, I think this is a great point. But, you know, Obi-Wan says, you know, only Imperial stormtroopers are so precise. Yeah. you know, I think that we as Star Wars fans, we always get, you know, we're always like, oh, stormtroopers can't shoot, blah, blah, blah. Have you ever watched any other action movie, though? Nobody can shoot when our heroes are the ones being shot at.
Right.
So I think, for me, it's like I don't see it as a problem because I think I love Anthony's way of kind of making sense of it, because going with the idea that maybe they really can't shoot, and, you know, really cool little insight that maybe it's just by the marks of the blasters themselves, they look to be newer weapons that the Sand People clearly wouldn't own. But I really do think the Stormtroopers just get a bad rap. They only can't hit the heroes. Think about it, though. You know, and I've always had, like, even this issue with Rebels, like, they can't hit anything. And it's like, well, that's how action movies and shows work when the heroes are the ones that are the target.
Right.
The idea is that clearly the Empire phases out the clones because they find conscripts and people that join the academy to be more effective. There needs to be a reason for that, yeah. I would think. Granted, it's probably cheaper.
It's cheaper, and the clones are aging at twice the rate, so they're right. Aging out.
Yeah. But I think that the stormtroopers are indeed an effective tool, especially if you read some of these newer novels where they talk about, you know, how people do indeed fear the stormtroopers. And I think that's important. And I think it's important to remember that, you know, I'm literally just thinking of, like, any James Bond movie. You know, whenever James Bond is combating villains who are also, you know, well-trained, you know, shooters and assassins, they always seem to miss. You know, I think that's just the way it works in a hero movie. I don't think it's that the stormtroopers are necessarily horrible. So that's my way of kind of reconciling that point. I think they get a bad rap. And I think
it's funny because you mentioned, you know, the James Bond angle and all, you know, just the idea that bad guys miss the heroes in movies in general. I just went to go see Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol last weekend. Or not Ghost Protocol, Rogue Nation.
Oh, P.S. Did they have the Star Wars preview for that?
The one at the theater I went to had it, so.
Man, maybe I gotta go see that movie then. I'm just trying anything I can, Jason. Sorry.
But there was a scene in that movie where Tom Cruise is running down this hallway, and it's a really narrow hallway.
Hashtag like, spoiler alert, Jason. I did not know there were any narrow hallways.
Oh, well, I'm sorry. But there's these pipes on the side of the hallway, and the bad guy comes around the corner, and he has this machine gun, and he just fires down the hallway. You know, just this big swath of bullets down the hallway after him. And they all just impact on the pipes on either side of Tom Cruise, but none hit him. And I'm like, well, obviously, if this was real life, about five of those bullets would have ended up in Tom Cruise, but he has to live the rest of the movie, so they can't.
Right.
It was just one of those things I noticed in the middle of it, because there's all these bullets, and they're just impacting all around him. And it's just like, well, he should have been at least hit, at least nicked.
At least nicked, right? Yeah.
Right?
When somebody shoots a machine gun and just strafes it back and forth, you're bound to get hit by something.
Right. But no. But anyway, yeah, as far as the stormtroopers are concerned, they may not be marksmen. They're not bounty hunters. Bounty hunters have to – they rely on their accuracy. They have to be accurate. They have to be proficient with whatever weapon they use. Because that's how they make their money. That's how they stay alive. Stormtroopers are an army. They fight en masse. And they're usually, you know, traveling together. And so they don't necessarily need to be quite as accurate. And since there's conscripts, you're going to have varying levels of accuracy based on people's eyesight. And of course, as Luke said, you can't see a thing in these helmets. You're just going to have, you know, some variation of accuracy with these stormtroopers. But you look at the beginning of A New Hope, and those stormtroopers are really good.
Yeah.
They blow into the Tanifor, and, you know, at least half of that initial fighting force is dead within the first 10 or 15 seconds
of
that battle.
And that's all the 501st, right?
Right. And so they're very good. And so I think maybe comparatively, compared to the Sand People, the Stormtroopers are probably much more accurate. And they knew to aim for the Sandcrawler's, you know, drive systems, so they can stop the Sandcrawler and then get on board and take it captive or whatever. Whereas the Sand People probably would have just been shooting at it, you know, hitting the side, hitting... Yeah, exactly. And... because you see all the blast marks, like, in the treads and everything, and in the motors where the treads are. You know, the Stormtroopers know to aim for those things. Sand People probably don't. So I think that's more where Obi-Wan's coming from. They're probably comparatively more accurate, and they know what to hit in order to make that thing stop.
Sure. Good point. So. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good – you know, I mean, the only time we really see the Stormtroopers very poorly shooting is on the Death Star. And again, they're shooting at the hero. Of course, they're going to miss. But even if you want to take a little bit further in universe, they probably don't have the best stormtroopers stationed on the Death Star because they're not expecting an invasion of the Death Star. You know what I mean? So
right. They're going to have their more proficient troopers on the front lines where they're needed, not, you know, back at the base that nobody is going to have the guts to attack. So
yeah, good. Good question. So our next question comes from Jackson, who's been on the show a while ago. He always writes in a lot. Great comments, great questions. He says, I have a Larian inquiry. In The Phantom Menace, you see Quinlan Vos in the background. We know Quinlan Vos is a very powerful Jedi. Just watch him in the Clone Wars. My question to you is, why did Quinlan Vos not sense how powerful Anakin was in the Force, but Qui-Gon did? Also, why did Quinlan Vos not just help Qui-Gon get off of Tatooine? Finally, did you get my matchup idea of Daisy Ridley's boyfriend versus Carl? Oh, yes, we got that. But Jason, what do you think about the Quinlan Vos stuff?
Well, And for those who are wondering, wait, Quinlan Voss was in The Phantom Menace? Yes. There was an extra that was dressed up that inspired the character of Quinlan Voss, and he's sitting in Tatooine under the awning where Sebulba is eating his chuba as the heroes are blast. So he's back there in the background. For those of you who have no idea where he's at.
Yeah. I needed you to give me that because I forgot. I was like, where's Quinlan Voss on Tatooine? Is that definitely him, though, or is it just a dude that looks like him?
It's been retconned, or had been retconned, that was actually him.
Okay.
I don't know if due to the canon if that's still him or not, but in the Legends, that was definitely Voss. And during the Legends, he spent a lot of time undercover. He's an undercover Jedi more than anything. And I think still in canon, if Dark Disciple is any indication, he still is. He does a lot of undercover missions, and he sort of, you know, hangs around the dregs of society rather than, you know, a lot of diplomatic missions. So we don't really know exactly, as far as I know, why Quinlan Voss is there. But as to why he didn't sense how powerful Anakin was in the Force, he probably just wasn't looking. You know, Qui-Gon knows because Qui-Gon is open to the living Force, and Qui-Gon is always open to everything. And Quinlan Voss probably didn't have to get in contact with Anakin. He didn't have to go to the junk shop, and Watto's junk shop in particular. You know, he probably may not have even run across Anakin, whereas Qui-Gon did. Why Quinlan Voss didn't help Qui-Gon get off Tatooine? Well, Qui-Gon was kind of undercover too. He wasn't parading around like he was a Jedi. He was wearing, you know, a poncho and all that fun stuff. And so, you know, even if there are two Jedi on the same planet and they're both undercover, they're not going to try and help the other one because that'll just draw attention and maybe blow whatever they're doing there. You know, so that's my, you know, I don't know. Did you have anything else or...
No, I think you kind of hit the nail on the head there. You know, it doesn't make sense. I mean, I was going to say for sure, like the same thing as you did. You know, Quinlan Voss doesn't have any sort of run-in with Anakin. I guess you could say, well, like, can he just sense this Force presence? But it's like the reason I'm fine with him not noticing it, just because he's a powerful Jedi. And we do see him to be a powerful Jedi. You know, he's good with a lightsaber. He's very intuitive. But I think it also says something about Qui-Gon's character, too. Qui-Gon is so in tune with the living Force that he's mm-hmm. more responsive to things like that than Quinlan Voss would be. Right. And again, Quinlan Voss probably had no interaction with Anakin. So, you know, again, Qui-Gon has a direct experience of Anakin, and he is someone who's very receptive to the living Force. So I think it makes sense that Qui-Gon has that reaction, has that response, whereas Quinlan Voss does not.
And to his last question, Daisy's boyfriend versus Carl, who would win?
Are you asking me? Because I think you know. Yeah. I think you know the answer. Jar Jar, because he'd come to my aid. Yusa in trouble. Be like, don't worry, Jar Jar, I got this. No, see, you don't. Master and Mace.
Mace help. Mace help.
Oh man.
I have no idea who Daisy Ridley's boyfriend is, so I haven't done the research like Carl has.
I looked him up. He's very, very, very attractive young man. He was going to win in that category, but he's a bit slender.
A bit slender.
So, and I lift TIE fighters on the weekends. So, and battled Bane in the sewers of Gotham. So, anyway, good question, Jackson.
All right. We're going to wrap it up with one last one tonight. We're going to cut a little short here because we're running low on time recording. But, folks, please keep sending these in. Like we said, we'll probably get to another one either, you know, next month or next month and a half, something like that. This one is from Lenny Klein. This is just a suggestion, but I know I have never gotten to attend a Star Wars film in a theater, let alone on opening day. I was wondering if you guys would consider having a sort of tips section on some of your episodes detailing things like how far in advance to buy your movie tickets, to arrive at the theater, etc. maybe even little anecdotes like goofy or otherwise to a point. I once had a guy suggest that I bring one of those urine pouches to go in, and I started laughing. I heard that after he waited in 5 hours in line to have someone come out of the theater and say, in earshot of the line, how Vader was Luke's father. Anyway, take care, and may the Force be with you. So, for those of us getting ready to go see The Force Awakens at the midnight showing that may not have actually gotten to see a Star Wars movie in the theater before, do you have any tips or suggestions, Carl?
You know, I've actually never done... Did I do Revenge of the Sith at midnight? I honestly can't... I think I did. Revenge of the Sith is the only one I did at midnight. When the special editions came out, I was young, so I just went and my parents took me. There were lines, I remember, but they took care of all the ticket stuff. Same with Phantom Menace. Attack of the Clones, I went like the day it opened during the day, and my cousins bought me the tickets a couple days ahead of time. Revenge of the Sith, I bought them for myself. I think we live in a different era, though, now, even than when Revenge of the Sith came out. A lot of theaters that allow you to buy tickets in advance online and reserve your seat. I think that's what, like, because I'm going with a group down in New York City. Like, Joe Hogan's putting together a group, and, like, Jazz is flying over from Norway and stuff, and we're all going. I think the theater we're going to, the reason Joe picked this particular theater is because you can... when the tickets go on sale, you can just hop online, buy them in advance, and reserve a seat. It's great. So, you know, it's a different age, but I would say if that's not what you're able to do, if you're not able to, you know, just honestly, I would start calling your local theater, the one that you go to regularly, you know, a month before the movie comes out, and just ask them, hey, when are the tickets going to go on sale? If they don't know then, just keep calling, honestly. And when they go on sale, I would go right away the very first day. And just go pick one up. And then when you go to actually see it at midnight, just, I would say you need to arrive by probably 10 o'clock at night.
Cause you're the latest.
Yeah. But you already have a ticket. They're not going to oversell their tickets. Although some theaters do that. But you'll have a ticket, but you know, if you don't want to sit in the front row, you're going to want to get there early. And no, I mean, I don't think it'll be as extreme as having to have a bag to go to the bathroom in. I have very limited experience myself. But I know here in Boston, I'm not here going to Boston. I'm going to go in New York. But again, I think it'll be fine. If you call ahead of time and you just know you got to get to things a little bit early, I think you'll be fine.
Yeah. No. And I have a little bit of an interesting situation. I've actually never seen a Star Wars movie at midnight or on opening day in the theaters, which is a little embarrassing. So this will be my first Star Wars movie. I have gone to several midnight premieres since Revenge of the Sith has been in theaters, most notably for me, the Hot movies and the Avengers movies. I've gone to opening midnight showing. Well, actually, with the Avengers, it was more like the preview night, so it was like 7 o'clock or 10 o'clock on Thursday, because our local AMC theater does that. I don't think other theaters do, but the AMC does. But as far as the midnight showing, first of all, make sure you go with friends, because they'll be able to help hold your spot in line if you have to go to the bathroom, or if you're already been seated in the theater, they'll be able to save your seat or that sort of thing. Go with friends, and it's more fun that way too. Anyways, yeah, get the tickets ahead of time. Kyle Baca and I have gone to all these midnight shows before, and usually what happens if we're doing the midnight thing, somebody will get there about 7 or 8 and buy the tickets, and then maybe like 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock, we'll start getting there in line, to wait in line. And usually if it's a midnight showing, they will let the line be seated by 11. Because, you know, that way the line isn't, you know, going outside all around the corner and all that stuff. And they have people in there and they have a seat that they can sit in and, you know, go use the bathroom too. At least it's the way they do it at my theater. So I don't know if all theaters do this. So it's usually not too bad. And with Star Wars on a midnight showing, I would be surprised if your theater didn't have multiple screens showing it. So I don't think you'll have a problem getting in. Just make sure you have a ticket before you show up to get in line. Unless you're showing up to get in line at like 7 or 8. Yeah. So,
mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'm really excited though, because I haven't been to a Star Wars Midnight show yet, so this will be my first. I'm super excited.
Oh, I know, I can't wait, and it's I'm 99% sure I saw Revenge of the Sith at midnight, and I went with my two cousins. But you know, going to see this now, especially in light of my, you know, having a Star Wars podcast, having a fan community to watch it with, is going to be so much fun.
Oh yeah,
I can't wait. This is going to be great.
yes, it will. All right. Well, we didn't get through quite all of these. We didn't think we would. Sadly.
Yeah.
But
we got through all but two. Well, two. Well, there were still a few that were written in today that we obviously didn't get to at all. So I apologize for that. But you know, we're just going to do another episode soon. That's all.
Yes. It will not be, you know, 4 months until we get to your Larian inquiries again. So please keep sending them in. We love your input and your interaction with us. So, and there was a lot of good questions here. So
yeah, there really were.
I like it. And it's always fun because you never know what you're going to get with these Larian inquiries. It's not a set topic, and you kind of go from this one to that one to that one over here. You never know what's coming up. So it's kind of fun that way.
It is.
It keeps us on our toes.
Yeah, I love it. And Jason has them all beforehand and gets to prep them, and I don't. Thanks, Jason.
Well, all I do is I just gather them and stick them in a Word document. And
he's like, here you go, Carl.
Here. I meant to send that to you yesterday.
I know. Oh, it's fine. I don't care. I like it because I get to even be more on my toes. I'm basically a ballerina tonight. or a ballerina man. Is that what they call ballerina men? Ballerina men? I don't know. Well, made that up.
Male ballerina?
Anyway.
My no. Misa Day starting Pee Yoki Day with the Frisky Morning Munch, and then boom! Misa dancing and wearing a tutu and pow! Misa fall.
Oh man. But yeah, thank you everybody for your questions, your inquiries. And we are definitely going to get to more of them. I think we're just going to have to start doing one of these episodes once a month if we've got enough questions.
I think so too.
And you're right. They're fun because we get in universe questions. We get just fan related questions. It's great. It's kind of a little bit of everything. So it's a nice little, there's a nice little flavor to it. And it's still great too, because like all of you guys are such hardcore Star Wars fans and think about it in the same way we do, and you come at it from a very similar angle. So it's a lot of fun to respond to this stuff.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. All right.
And also, you guys write all the content for us. We just say respond. It's great.
Yeah, that's also
very little prep work.
Yeah, there's no prep work. We just, you know, we don't have to write any notes or anything. It's great. No.
Yeah, I love it.
I write a lot of notes anyways, but...
used to, man. I don't anymore, too, either. I really don't make a ton of notes, but I remember when we first started, Jason, I would have, like, pages in a notebook.
So. I know. I'd see you flipping pages to, you know, like, double-check something that you...
Yeah, I know. It's the same way when I started teaching. I would, like, literally write down every little point I wanted to make in class, and then after, like, my first year, I, like, literally just had, like, little bullets. It's a lot quicker, a lot more fun.
Yes. So,
and they learned nothing. No, I'm kidding. Oh, man. But before we go, we want to hit on a couple of quick things before we sign this episode out. But the first thing I want to hit on is something kind of negative. And I just want to respond to something that was a review we received yesterday in the iTunes store about the Wampa's Lair. And it's not a review of our show at all. It's a personal attack against me, and I don't appreciate it. So I'm going to respond publicly as a result. And I get it. You know, I do a podcast. I'm doing something in a public forum. People are going to have, you know, their opinions of things. And, you know, we've had, you know, Jason, we've had, you know, negative feedback in the past, but typically constructive negative feedback, you know, things mm-hmm. like, you know, your music's too loud, or you're not as funny as Steve Glosson, get over it. You know, stuff like that. All constructive things. But this is just, it's just a rude attack against me, and I really don't appreciate it. And it's out of line, and I want to respond to it. The comment's title is Shame on You, Carl. It's written by a user named Kalel. And he says, I gave this podcast 1 star because Carl abandoned Steve Glosson's podcast. Know what I'm saying? Real quick, it's not Steve Glosson's podcast. It's our podcast. We came up with this together. It's a joint project. takes two to tango. He continues. Without even telling him, hey, I can't do this anymore, or hey, I'll be back soon, just left him high and dry. Shame on you, Carl. So first off, I'd just like to know how he knows how this all went down, because I don't recall telling anyone my personal business. And if you listen to our recent episode of Quist that just came out a couple days ago, Steve and I addressed the fact that we haven't done a show in a long time. We explained why we haven't done the show in a long time. And, you know, I just, frankly, this is a very rude and out of place comment, specifically in our podcast page, Jason. Mm-hmm. They could have written that in Quiz. They could have said this in the Quiz page, you know, like, and they could have attacked me there or whatever if they want. But this is inappropriate because it also negatively affects our show. It negatively affects you, Jason, who have nothing to do with this. Mm-hmm. And also, Steve and I are good friends, and you don't know what goes on behind the scenes, and you also don't know me. And to make this seem like I just left Steve is completely irresponsible. It's also completely
false.
And I don't appreciate somebody making a comment about me when they don't know me at all. So again, that's all I'm going to say about it. You know, you have a right to be upset. I'm obviously, you much like Quist, and I appreciate that. I'm hoping you even listen to the Wampas Lair, and I hope you enjoy this show as well. But if you have a personal attack against me, this is not the place for it. And again, to me, it'd be very difficult to attack me personally because you don't really know me, you know? So it wasn't fair to me. It wasn't fair to Jason. And also it's not fair to Steve. And I know I'm going to address this with Steve on Quist next, where it deserves to be addressed. But you know, if you want to make comments like this, all I'm going to say is just grow up, because this isn't the place for it. And I don't appreciate it. And I want to be publicly heard saying that, you know, so that's all I'm going to say about it. I'll leave it as it is. So, you know, if you want to write a review of our podcast in iTunes, please do so, to review our show, not to review either one of us as people, because you don't know us. So right. That's all I'll say.
And not in response to something that we do outside of this show. I'm frustrated about this because, you know, first of all, Quiz is back and people should go check out Quiz. I'm actually listening to the return episode of Know What I'm Saying right now. Well, not right now, but
Jason not paying attention at all tonight in the episode.
Nope. And it's funny that there's, you know, they address the issue, but they've already talked about Nickelback and comics and it's all great. So, folks, Quiz is back. Y'all should go listen to it. And if you have that kind of criticism, talk to us personally. Email us. Don't leave it out there where it's a detriment to something that isn't actually related to what you're talking about.
Right.
Because that was somebody irritated that there isn't Quiz, you know, thinking that Carl's to blame and had nothing to do with the Wampas Lair. So, because Quiz and the Wampas Lair coexisted when they were doing regular episodes back in the day, and it will coexist now that they're back doing episodes. So it had nothing to do with this show. So please keep those comments where they're supposed to be and not where they're irrelevant. Yep. We will totally accept criticism of our show. If you don't like our show, that's fine. You don't have to listen to us. If you have, you know, comments about how you think our show should be better, that's fine. And we'll take that, you know, and we'll address it, and we will listen to it. But this is a little out of place.
Yeah, yeah. It's uncalled for, and it just doesn't need to be there.
Right.
So I'm letting them know publicly that it doesn't belong there. So. Right. And I hope other listeners are outraged as well, and and can see through somebody's frustration.
Yes. All right. Well, to get back to the Wampas Lair,
yes.
We do have a new poll for you guys here. And of course, if you've been following along with the show, you know what this is. Our new poll is going to be, what is your favorite track of the Revenge of the Sith soundtrack? And we will put that up on our social media. And I will ask Carl for that in just a second. But I also want to remind everybody that we have a contest that is going on. We want to sort of update our introduction. We want to keep the music for the introduction, but change up the dialogue and the words, make it a little less Emperor Palpatine. you know, because the Wampa's Lair isn't, you know, a hive of the Sith. So we're going to want to make it a little bit less Emperor Palpatine, but I'm having a bugger of a time trying to come up with what to say in the time that we have that still works for the show and still flows well. So we're putting it out to you guys, the Larians. And we, as you guys know from this show, we have a lot of interactive Larians. So if you guys come up with an idea for our new intro, please send it in, and either just, you know, as a Word document or type it in an email or something. And if you want to, you can even record it. And that would be cool too. But the winner of said contest, and we will choose that winner and announce the winner on episode 150. So you got 9 episodes after this one, will be able to come on the show and talk about whatever they want to, a topic of their choice. So, and if you want to respond to the poll or send in something for the contest, where can they do that, Carl?
They can do it on Facebook, facebook.com/wampazarpodcast. Feel free to follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/wampazar, or shoot us an email at wampazarpodcast@gmail.com. And of course, you can find us and all the other great Star Wars Report podcasts of the 2nd Airborne Division over on starwarsreport.com. And also, if you have never written an iTunes review for us, we could definitely use another nice one or two to counterbalance the one that has literally nothing to do with our show, but at the same time did give us 1 star, so pull down our ratings a little bit. You know, if you want to write us a review in iTunes, we'd appreciate it, or even just go in and rate the show. If you haven't done that yet, that'd be awesome too.
Yes. And like I said before, go check out Quiz. It's funny.
It is funny. Steve is a funny guy.
And support Carl.
Project Carl.
Project Carl.
Before we go, also, if you want, we are finishing up the New Hope radio drama after the episode tonight with episode 13, Force and Counterforce. So that'll do it for our New Hope radio dramas. Next episode, Jason and I are going to be doing our Phantom Menace commentary. Mm-hmm. So we will hit up the poll and the following episode after the commentary, as well as start up the Empire Strikes Back radio drama, because you know, we asked you guys if you wanted to continue, and several people said yes. So we will do so.
Yes, indeed.
And yeah, so there you go. That's it for me.
All right. Well, that wraps up this episode of the Wampa's Lair podcast. This has been episode number 141, A Larian Hope. For Carl, I'm Jason, and we will see you next time here in the Wampa's Lair.
Luke's just not a farmer, Owen. He has too much of his father in him.
Star Wars, based on characters and situations created by George Lucas. Episode 13, Force and Counterforce. A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away, there came a time of revolution, when rebels united to challenge a tyrannical empire. Now, that struggle has come to a decisive moment, as the Empire's huge space-going fortress, the Death Star, approaches the rebel base on the 4th moon of the planet Yavin. The rebels have elected to stand fast and engage the Death Star in a desperate battle in which they'll either triumph and save the galaxy from cruel Imperial domination, or be utterly destroyed by the terrible power of the battle station's prime weapon. As the rebels rush to scramble their tiny fleet of fighter craft for the assault, the Imperial lords prepare to wipe them out of existence.
Yavin at maximum velocity. The rebel base will be within firing range in 30 minutes.
be a day long remembered, Governor Tarr. It has seen the end of Obi-Wan Kenobi and will soon see the end of the rebellion.
Yes, the Emperor will be pleased, Vader.
The prime weapon is fully prepared, Governor Tarkin. We'll be able to obliterate the rebel moon the moment we're within range.
Very good, Monty. Are all our people at their battle stations?
We're on full alert status, sir.
With your permission, Governor Tarkin, I'll make a personal tour of inspection. Nothing must be left to chance.
As you wish, Lord Vader.
I shall be back well before we fire the prime weapon.
Governor Tarkin, may I compliment you on this achievement?
Well, thank you, Motti. Although, of course, others made their contribution. Vader's efforts to locate this base, for example.
But you supervised construction of the Death Star, sir, and you command it. In destroying the rebellion as you destroyed Alderaan, you'll prove that you hold the ultimate power in the galaxy.
In the name of the Empire, of course.
Of course, Governor Tarkin. But the Emperor is far from here, and you are in actual control.
This isn't the first time you've spoken in this fashion, Motti. Say what it is that's on your mind.
If you command it, Governor.
I do.
Very well. This battle station has become the very source of the Empire's power. Not even the Imperial Starfleet could stand against us. And all of that power lies at your command.
You are close to treason, Motti.
Is it treason to point out that you could demand a position of authority second only to that of the Emperor?
I would not care to have the Emperor as my enemy.
But command of the Death Star makes you his equal. You could share dominion of the galaxy.
With you at my right hand.
I'm your willing servant, Governor Tarkin.
And then, of course, there's Lord Vader to consider.
Yes, formidable as he is, the Dark Lord of the Sith is hardly an insurmountable problem.
You think not?
The personnel of this battle station owe their allegiance to you. Lord Vader, for all his superstitious trickery, can be dealt with. Do not forget that you wield the ultimate power.
I shall consider what you've said, Motti. First, however, we must attend to the rebels. When they have been eradicated, there will be time to think further about your suggestion.
The faster we get this stuff loaded and get out of here, the better I'll like it. I'm gonna be long gone when that Death Star starts fire. I still can't believe these rebels are gonna take that thing on with snub fighters.
Han? Chewbacca? So, you got your reward.
You guessed it. Hey, I see they found you a flight suit. You look just like an old hand, kid.
We're just gonna leave, Han.
Yeah, that's right. We ditched that homing device the Imperials hit aboard the Falcon. We're raising ship. We got some old debts we gotta pay with this stuff, right, Chewie? Even if we didn't, you don't think we'd be fool enough to stick around here, do you?
I was hoping you would.
Why don't you come with us, Luke? You're pretty good in a fight. I could use you.
Oh, come on, Han. Why don't you look around you? You know what the rebels are up against. They could use a good pilot like you. You're turning your back on them.
Well, what good's a reward if you ain't around to spend it? Besides, attacking that battle station ain't my idea, Courage. It's more like suicide.
Yeah. Well, take care of yourself, Han. I guess that's what you're best at, isn't it? So long.
Hey, Luke.
Yeah?
May the Force be with you.
Sure.
What are you looking at, Chewie? I know what I'm doing. Come on, let's finish up and raise ship.
Princess?
What's wrong?
Oh, it's Han. I don't know. I really thought I could change his mind.
He's got his own path to follow, Luke. No one can choose it for him.
All flight crew, command your stations.
I only wish Ben were here.
Wait, Luke!
What?
Before you go. A kiss for luck.
Thanks.
Luke, come on!
I'll see you later, Leia.
Yes, Luke. Goodbye.
Luke, come on! We're lifting off in a minute or two. I'm all set, Biggs.
So I saw.
What?
So you finally found your dream girl, huh?
Yeah, it's good to know we'll be up there together, though.
Yeah, just like back home on Tatooine, Luke, racing through the Stone Needle. Well, there's your ship, Luke.
An X-Wing. Well, I've dreamed
Master
of this.
Luke. Master Luke, sir.
Oh, hi, 3PO.
Sir, the Rebels are rather short of R2 units, and so they're putting R2-D2 in the technical socket of your fighter.
Great! At least I'll have plenty of friends up there with me.
Luke, see you upstairs.
Right. Hey, take care of yourself, Biggs.
And very best of luck to you, Master Luke.
Thank you, 3PO.
Say, Red 5, your R2 unit seems a little beat up. You want me to see if I can find another one?
Not on your life. That little droid and I have been through a lot together.
Whatever you say.
You okay back there, R2? Good.
Hang on tight, R2. You simply have to come back, you know. You wouldn't want my life to become boring, would you?
You're ready for liftoff, Red 5. Time to seal your canopy.
Check.
Will be with you.
Ben?
Red Flight, this is Red Leader. Prepare for liftoff.
We'll be following the mission from right here, Your Highness, on this tactical display screen.
I see, General Dodona. C-3PO, come on, there's room for you right here.
Thank you, Your Highness.
Those blips there are our fighters. They're closing on the Death Star now.
What's their plan of attack?
The Y-Wing fighters are our primary attack ships. That's Gold Flight. Huh. They'll be first to make photon torpedo runs on the target shaft.
And the X-Wing fighters?
That's Red Flight. They'll draw the Imperials' fire and fly flak suppression runs.
And what if the Y-Wings don't manage to get a torpedo down that vent shaft?
Then the X-Wing fighters are a contingency force. Uh-huh. They'll take up the torpedo attack.
Death Star still approaching. Estimated time to firing range, 15 minutes.
Are you certain that a direct hit down the shaft will stop the battle station?
Not the torpedo itself, but the chain reaction a hit would set off in the station's main reactor, yes.
General Dodona, Red Flight and Gold Flight are now in range of the Death Star.
Patch in their communications net over the main system.
Yes, sir.
Red Flight, this is Red Leader. Lock all S-foils into
I haven't position. Had an opportunity yet to thank you properly, Your Highness, for allowing me to follow the attack here in the operations center.
What? Oh, you're welcome, 3PO. After all, you and R2 have been through a great deal for the Rebel Alliance, even if it wasn't by choice.
We both learned the full story when the plans for the Death Star were being retrieved from R2's memory banks. I only hope that R2 survives his current assignment.
You care very much about R2-D2, don't you?
I have grown used to it, even though we've only been together for a relatively short time.
It's possible to care for someone very much after only a short time.
Right, we're passing through their magnetic field. Hang on tight. I've been doing a little rattling.
Their countermeasures equipment should get them through.
They've made it through the magnetic field.
All ships, switch to your deflector shields. Double forward.
Wow, would you look at the size of that battle station?
Cut the chatter, Red 2. All ships, accelerate to attack speed. This is it.
They're moving into range of the Death Star.
Red Leader, this is Gold Leader.
That's the Y-Wing Flight Leader, Your Highness.
I copy, Gold Leader.
We're starting for the target shaft now.
Good hunting, Gold Leader. Red Leader to Red Flight, we're in position. I'm going to fly across the battle station's axis and try to draw fire.
That area is particularly well fortified. We'll be up to Red Flight to keep the Imperials busy.
Heavy fire, boss. 23 degrees.
I see. Stay low.
Red Leader, this is Red 5. I'm going in.
Luke, pull out. Pull out.
Are you all right? I got a little cook in that fireball, but I'm okay.
away!
Oh.
Our Red Flight has better than an even chance against those heavy guns, Your Highness. Those X-Wings are very agile ships.
But if the Imperials send out TIE fighters for ship-to-ship combat, what then?
Well, then our hopes would rest almost entirely with Gold Flight.
Red Leader, this is Red 5. I'm going in again.
Watch yourself, Luke. There's a lot of heavy fire coming from the right side of that deflector.
I'm on it.
Flight Leader, as we've picked up a new group of signals, enemy fighters coming your way.
Fighters?
I copy.
My scope's negative.
Stay here. Maintain visual scanning, Red Flight. With all this jamming, they'll be on top of you before your scopes can pick them up.
General, can't we track the Imperial fighters for them?
Not at this range, Princess. There's too much jamming and counter-jamming going on.
Here they come. They're right behind us.
Well, I'm watching. I can't see him.
Where is he? Sarge, one coming up on your tail.
I see him, Parker. This is flat.
Tight. I can't shake him.
Hang on, Biggs. I'm coming in. Stick tight to your wing, but all of you.
I got him, Biggs. You're clear.
Hey, thanks, Luke.
This is right, Red 4. I'll get him off your back.
Robo.
Gold Leader, three more fighters have left the Death Star. They may be after you.
This is Gold Leader. I copy.
Pull in, Luke. Pull in.
Watch it there. Fighters above you. Coming in.
I must have been caught.
Got it. Hey, you all right, Luke? I'm hit, but not bad. R2's working on it.
General's dying. Isn't there anything we can do to help them?
Every fighting craft we have is out there already, Your Highness. This is what the X-Wings were sent to do. Keep the Imperials occupied. At least we're not outnumbered.
Not yet.
Red 6, can you see Red 5?
There's a heavy fire zone over on this side. Luke, where are you?
I can't shake this TIE fighter.
Hold on, Luke.
The Death Star is 10 minutes from firing.
Thanks, Wedge.
Anytime.
Red Leader, this is Gold Leader. We are beginning our attack run.
I copy, Gold Leader. Go to it.
Exhaust port is marked and locked in. All Y-wings switch power to front deflector shield.
Good. The targeting computers have picked out the exhaust port.
How many gun batteries do you count, Gold 5?
I say about 20 guns, some on the surface, some in the tower.
Switch over to targeting computers.
Computer's locked on. I'm getting a signal.
Okay, we have a good chance now. Only a targeting computer has any real hope of scoring a precise hit.
Because of the speed?
That's right. You'll be flying down that trench so fast, the shot's virtually impossible for an unaided pilot.
The guns! They stop!
Stabilize your rear deflectors. Watch for enemy fighters.
They're coming in. Remarching 210.
Can't the X-Wings help them?
They're still engaging the other Imperials. Gold Flight is on its own now.
They got gold, too. This trench is too narrow. I can't maneuver.
Stay on target.
We're too close to each other.
Stay on target. Gold 5 to Red Leader. Lost Dutch, lost Tyree.
I copy.
I'm hit. The fighters came from behind.
He's gone. The Death Star is at 5 minutes in closing.
What do we do now, General Dodonna?
Red Flight will have to try to make the attack run. They're all we have left.
Talking.
Yes?
The Rebels' Y-Wing fighters have been destroyed, but their X-Wings have broken contact with our interceptors. We believe they're about to resume the attack the others were attempting.
Do you suppose they have any hope of succeeding?
No, sir. Lord Vader is out there in his personal fighter with his own wingmen. The other Rebels will meet the same fate as the first ones.
As you say, still, perhaps caution is warranted. Prepare my ship in case it seems more advisable for me to depart the Death Star.
Governor Tarkin, pardon me, sir, but you mustn't consider relinquishing your command, even temporarily.
Why not?
This battle station is the source of your influence and power. If you show that you can be made to abandon it, you undermine your hope of gaining supreme rank in the Empire.
You seem certain about that.
I am, Governor Tarkin.
And are you equally certain that there's no danger?
No matter what the rebel strategy is, they'll fail. Lord Vader has personally annihilated their first attack group, and he'll do the same for the other.
Yes, for one who professes to rely upon some unseen force, Vader is extremely adept with our most advanced prototype fighter. Very well, Motti.
Won't regret this, Governor Tarkin.
Governor Tarkin, we've analyzed the rebel attack, and it appears there may be a danger. Should I have your ship standing by?
Evacuate? In our moment of triumph? I think you overestimate these rebels' chances. Come, gentlemen, let us watch the final destruction of the Rebel Alliance from the command center.
The Death Star will be within firing range in 3 minutes.
R2, see if you can't give me a clearer image on that targeting computer. Thanks, now better brace yourself. It's up to us now.
Red Flight, this is Red Leader. Sound off.
Red 2 here, Red Leader. Off to your right.
Red 3 standing by.
Red 5 at rendezvous mark 6.1.
Red 10 here, boss.
Red 12 right behind you, Red Leader.
Like we're all that's left.
Red Leader, the
This is Base One. Keep half your group out of range for the next attack run.
Copy, Base One. Luke, I want you to take Wedge and Biggs. Stay up here and wait for my signal to start your run.
Me? I copy, Red Leader.
Good luck, boss.
Thanks. Okay, Red Flight. This is it.
R2, how are things going topside? Well, just do your best to keep the damage under control.
Hey, can you hang on, Luke?
I think so, Biggs.
Good. It'll take all three of us to make a successful run. We should be able to see the target location by now.
Keep your eyes open for those fighters.
It's too much interference.
Red Fire, can you get a visual on them from where you are?
Oh, negative, Red Leader. There's no sign of... Wait. Coming in on you, 0.53.
I see a targeting computer locked on. Coming up.
Hey, boss, hurry.
No fighters off me for a few more seconds.
They're all over us back here.
Red Leader, we're right above you. Turn to point 05. We'll cover for you.
Stay there. They just got Red 10. I've lost my starboard engine. Their leader's flying a prototype fire. He's a real killer. Ah, Red 5, get set for your attack run. It's all for me.
Red 5, the Death Star will be within range in approximately 1 minute.
Okay. Biggs, Wedge, let's close it up. We're going down that trench full throttle.
Right with you, boss.
Boss.
Luke, at this speed, will you be able to pull out in time after you fire?
It'll be just like Beggar's Canyon back home, Biggs.
Okay, we'll stay back and cover for you.
It's up to you two to screen me from those fighters.
My scope shows a tower, but I can't see the exhaust port. Are you sure the computer can hit it?
It'll hit it, Wedge. Please hit it. It's got to. Watch yourselves. Increase speed, full throttle.
We're right behind you.
R2, that stabilizer's broken loose again. See if you can't lock it down.
Look out! Fighters right behind us. I'm hit. Losing control. I can't hold course.
Well, get clear, Wedge. You can't do any more good back there.
Sorry, Luke. The tires aren't following. They're staying on you. The leader's flying some kind of prototype ship.
Hurry, Luke. They're coming in much faster this time. I can't hold them.
R2, try and increase the power.
The leader's last to me. Luke, I...
Biggs? Biggs? Hang on, R2.
Luke, 30 seconds left.
Targeting computer. Locked on.
Use the force, Luke.
Ben? Ben!
Let go, Luke. Trust me. Reach out with your feelings.
I trust you, Ben.
Luke, this is Base One. You've switched off your targeting computer. What's wrong?
There's nothing wrong. I'm all right! I'm hit! They got R2!
The Death Star is nearly in range!
Their leader's right on my back! There's nothing I can do! Somebody's firing on them! Han?
Okay! You're all clear, kid!
Han, I knew you'd come back!
Now come on! Let's blow this thing and go!
Reach out. My feelings and... fire! It's away!
Now get clear, kid! Pour it on!
Report total destruction of your objective.
Come on, Luke, let's go park these creatures. Celebrate.
I'm right behind you, Han.
Remember, Luke, the Force will be with you. Always.
Damage our reputation.
Oh, come on, Han. It's about time you stop
it. Okay, lower that R2 unit carefully.
R2? Oh, no, I forgot he was hit. Lower him right here, Chief.
He sure took a bad one back there.
R2, can you hear me? Say something.
Oh, sir, you can repair him, can't you?
We'll get to work on him right away.
You simply must repair him. Master Luke, if any of my circuits or gears will help, I'd gladly donate them.
Don't worry, 3PO. He'll be all right.
We'll see that our best people are working on him. He certainly deserves it.
Will you quit pacing, Han? There's nothing to be worried about.
Well, me and Chewie ain't too comfortable around all these ceremonies and formal stuff.
Look, they're gonna hang a medal around your neck. They're not gonna stand you up against a wall and shoot you.
It's still not my line of work.
You'll survive.
You're taking it pretty well. Hey, that's a real sharp outfit they scrounged up for you.
This? Well, I thought since the princess went to all the trouble of arranging a ceremony, I thought I might...
You thought you'd make a good impression on her, huh? Smart boy.
Still seems so strange to have met her, you know? I remember the first time I saw her, just an image from R2's memory banks.
Led you a long way, Luke.
Sure did. Everything's so different all of a sudden. So many things have changed.
Too bad about Biggs. And Ben and all the others. They're the ones who deserve the medals.
Well, they died for something they believed in. What made you come back, Han?
The Wookiee here got stubborn about it.
Oh, come on.
Well, he did give me an argument. Besides, I did some thinking about what you and Ben and Her Highness said, and I don't know, a few things had happened to me along the way. So I turned the Falcon around. Maybe it's time I tried a steady job, huh?
By the way, I'm glad you did. That TIE fighter had me cold.
I couldn't quite nail their leader, the one in that prototype fighter. He was good. But I got one of his wingmen and the other collided with him.
And that knocked him out of the fight?
Yeah, but I don't think it disabled him. I guess he got clear.
Well, whatever happened, it was good enough for me.
Gentlemen, the troops are assembled and we're ready for the presentation.
Now, what do I have to do again?
Simply walk the length of the throne room to the dais, where the Princess Leia will award you your medals.
You can do it, Solo. It'll be easy.
Yeah, sure. Come on, Chewie.
This way, gentlemen.
Well, there's no backing out now, buddy.
Right. All these rebels.
We better not be last on the dinner line.
You're supposed to be serious.
I'll bet they're tired of staring at each other. Hey, Chewie, give them eyes front. Good discipline there.
Shape it up, will you?
On behalf of the Rebel Alliance.
Glad we could make it, believe me.
General Dodonna, the medals, please. Thank you. Accept these, the highest decoration the Alliance can bestow, for your gallantry. Han Solo?
You still can't come up with any more cash, huh?
Han, if you don't act like a grown-up, I'll strangle you. And Luke Skywalker.
Thank you, Your Highness.
No, Luke. Thank you. From the Rebel Alliance and from Leia Organa.
What I did for both, Leia. Oh, look, it's R2-D2.
Yes, Master Luke, he is completely repaired.
Wonderful.
And might we both offer you a sincere congratulations.
Thanks, Luke.
And now you may turn to your comrades in arms and receive their ovation. How do you like being a hero, Han?
Some parts weren't too bad. I don't know, you want to do it again sometime?
What do you say, Luke? Shall we?
It wouldn't surprise me at all.
Star Wars, Episode 13 by Brian Daley, based on characters and situations created by George Lucas. Featured in the cast were Mark Hamill as Luke Skywalker, Anthony Daniels as C-3PO, Bernard Behrens as Ben Kenobi, James Blendick as General Dodonna, David Clennon as Mati, Keen Curtis as Tarkin, Perry King as Han Solo, Brock Peters as Darth Vader, and Anne Sachs as Leia. Other players in the series were Adam Arkin, Joel Brooks, Clyde Burton, John Dukakis, Bruce French, David Alan Greer, Jerry Harden, John Harkins, Cynthia Herman, Scott Jacoby, Philip Collard, Meshach Taylor, Mark Vahanian, John Welsh, and Kent Williams. The series was directed by John Madden, with sound mixing and post-production by Tom Vagley. Music by John Williams. Sound design for Lucasfilm by Ben Burt. Story editor for the series was Lindsay Smith. Casting and production coordination by Mel Saar. Executive producer was Richard Toskin. Executive producer for Lucasfilm was Carol Teitelman. This is Ken Hiller. Star Wars was presented by National Public Radio in association with KUSC-FM Los Angeles with the cooperation of Lucasfilm Limited.